You seek the key, but first you must learn the ways of precision, craft, and performance with Acura's all-electric ZDX. With a premium Bang & Olufsen sound system, up to a 313-mile range, and A-Type S variant with an estimated 500 horsepower, their ZDX is the most powerful SUV yet. Unlock the energy when you visit Acura.com to order yours today. Hello and welcome to the Two Robbies podcast, your destination for in-depth discussion and analysis of the Premier League and the Champions League. I'm Robbie Musto, and today we have a special guest co-hosting Danny Higginbotham, filling in for Robbie Hill today. Thanks, Danny, for joining us today. And here are today's topics. Chelsea-Liverpool play out an entertaining 2-2 draw at Stamford Bridge, but the main talk continues to centre around Romelu Lukaku dropped by Thomas Tuchel. Arsenal and Man City also playing out an entertaining match, which saw Man City take all 3 points to extend their lead at the top, but did they deserve it? Wolves shock Manchester United at Old Trafford thanks to João Moutinho's late winner. Tottenham and West Ham both earning crucial victories on the road, and Everton's struggles continue as we head into the new year. All that coming up in today's episode. All right, Danny.
Hello.
Thanks very much, mate, for jumping in. My buddy can't make it today,
So
thanks for coming in, and we'll chat all the main talking points from another action-packed, story-packed, incident-packed match day in the Premier League, as you know. I think we've got to start right at the top there, Chelsea versus Liverpool. It was Chelsea 2, Liverpool 2. Romelu Lukaku was dropped. Should we first hit that, Danny? I think we may differ a little bit here on this. So we'll get into the game afterwards, but of course, that was a big story, a big decision by Thomas Tuchel on Romelu Lukaku. I'm sure people know. A quick background, the interview, which was 3 or 4 weeks ago now, where he was, you know, talking about Tuchel and not happy at the club at the moment, played a different system, I'll try my best, I love Inter, I want to go back to Inter at some point, not when I'm too old. So lots of things that were said there, and hopefully our viewers and listeners will have heard most of that. But I was surprised that he dropped him from the team for this massive game against Liverpool. Were you?
No. I personally think it was actually the right thing to do, just because, you know, we've both been in dressing rooms before where maybe a player's stepped out of line, so said something that he potentially shouldn't have done. But I think when it's someone like Lukaku, who is the record transfer signing, you know, a lot's resting on him as an individual. Okay, he's been in and out of the team. He's had you know, issues himself. And I just think that Tuchel was being undermined. And I think as a manager, if you allow yourself, you're the boss at the end of the day, what you say has to go. And I think if you allow yourself to be undermined, then what can happen then is that other players can look at it and go, well, hang on a second. If I did that, I don't think I'd get away with it. And I think that Tuchel is letting everybody know he's boss. So I'm all for it.
Yeah, so let's just try and cut to the bit where we disagree.
Okay, yeah.
I think we both agree that the words were out of order.
Yeah.
I think the bit that we may disagree on is the severity of the words said. And I think I said on our broadcast that was anything said that was punishable? And this is where we obviously differ. Punishable. Like, you know, we know it's a big story anyway, and he's made it bigger by leaving him out. And if you look back at that interview, which is 3 weeks ago, and he's been back talking to the manager since then, and back in form, and back in the team scoring 2 goals in his last 2 games, in a game where they needed him, was it an overreaction? I think it was. I don't think it was anything damageable. So you argue the case that what he did was really undermining the manager others might potentially follow in the future, because that's where we differ.
Yes. I think the way you've got to look at it as well is that, you know, it's been said that it wasn't authorised by the club.
Right, agreed.
So therefore, if he knows what he's going to say is going to be absolutely fine, why not go to the club first and say, I'm going to go and do this interview. Are you okay with it? You know what it's like now. The majority of times when players are doing interviews for a club, there's a press officer with them. There's a reason there was a press officer not with him. And that, in my opinion, is that
fair enough.
Press officer wouldn't allow that to come out. It wouldn't allow it to be said. And I just think that you've got Thomas Tuchel. He's at the club now. He's won the Champions League with Chelsea. He's brought in this star name, a player that, you know, record transfer. Sometimes we'll see it from players that want to leave the club after they've been at the club for a certain amount of years. We saw it with Harry Kane, you know, he wanted to leave the football club. This, for me, is a completely different situation. This is Lukaku who's come to the club. He's not been there 5 minutes yet. You know, he's now talking about his former club, about how he left there, how he'd love to go back there.
But is that bad? Pick out the bits that was bad. Pick out the bits. So I want to go back to Inter Milan at some point in my career, not when I'm too old. That's okay. He's doing the interview really to speak to the Inter fans a little bit. We understand that. What's the bit that's damaging enough to do this? Is it the bit about Tuchel's change of system and it's not good for me? What specifically was it?
I think he's undermined Tuchel.
How?
Think.
What? In what?
In terms of what he's saying is in terms of the style of play and things like that. But I go back to what I said previously, which is, if it wasn't a problem to do this interview, why not tell the people at Chelsea before you do it? Because that's what happens more often than not. Mm. You know, like I wasn't a big name player or anything like that whatsoever, but every time I did an interview, there was a press officer with me. You know that that's part of the way things are. So therefore, if Lukaku's doing an interview and it's not been sanctioned by the club, there's no press officer there, why is that? Because if it's something that's not that bad, have someone with you.
Yeah, again, so let's just switch it quickly to, if you were in that dressing room and you heard the interview, wouldn't you want him in the team against Liverpool, though? Would it bother you, Danny, that much, what words were said?
No, I couldn't care less. But I'm not the manager. It doesn't bother me. I've seen teammates fighting. I've seen teammates say things that they're not happy about the managers.
So many bad things I've seen and witnessed.
But you're not the manager.
But I'm the players, and I want him in with me.
You want him in with you, but what I would say is that he's not undermining you. He's not looking at you. He's not questioning your management. You know, he's not questioning. Okay. Hypothetically, if a player came out in a dressing room and did a public interview,
right, like that,
was disrespectful to you as a teammate,
Or am I the manager?
Now? No. As a teammate, because that's how I'm looking at it, as a predicament, as in terms of would you want him in as a teammate? If a player came out and did an interview and said that
happened all the time, that was rubbish.
I wasn't going to say it. But if a player came out and said that, they're playing the same team as you, and said, you know, Robbie Musto, he's doing this, he's doing that, he's not right for this team, you would have a problem with that.
I would have a problem with it.
Okay,
yeah.
And so that's from the manager's side of things.
But I'd still probably have out with him, speak to him, and let's move forward and let's be in the team together. But listen, I get your side of it.
There is two sides, 100%.
Yeah, I just think it kind of hurts the team, it hurts the fans, it hurts the possibility of getting a result, and it is something that could have been wrapped up, I think, in a conversation. Maybe the conversation didn't go well, Danny, and we're going to find out midweek if Lukaku plays in the League Cup semi-final first leg against Spurs, if there's more to it. If he's back in in midweek, then they've had a word, there was a lot of noise, left him out, I didn't like it, okay, back on board, play again. And I think that's how it's going to go. Just quickly before we move on to the game itself, we don't want to spend too much time on that. Do you think there's any more to it where we won't see Lukaku for midweek, maybe the following FA Cup weekend as well?
Potentially.
So you think you think there's something else going on?
I just think, as you've quite rightly said, you talk about the magnitude of the game. You talk about the magnitude of the game that they've just played against Liverpool. He could have said, Tuchel could have come out and said, you know what, this is something that's happened. We've got a really important game. We're going to play in this game, then we're going to sort it out Monday. But the magnitude of the game... And he's still not having him. He's not having him in the squad. I think that tells me that he's not happy about it. And I probably look at the other side of things than yourself. And I would be surprised if we see him playing against Spurs in the League Cup. I would be surprised. And then I think it's the FA Cup after that, isn't it? So Tuchel may be looking at this
There's
and going, okay,
more,
let's get things sorted before the next Premier League game.
Okay, all right. Back to the game. Did they miss him, Danny? They got a 2-2. They came back from 2-0 down. Liverpool started off real quick. Clawed her way back into the match. Goals from Kovacic, unbelievable volley, incredible strike there to get 2-1, and Pulisic takes his goal really well. Did they miss him, and how do you think Chelsea played in this game against Liverpool?
I think the start of the game, you know, it was quite even. Then obviously there was a mistake, allowed Liverpool to take control, and they get the second goal, and I'm thinking to myself, Chelsea are in trouble here. But what Liverpool didn't do, which they're usually so good at, is managing the game. They just kept going, you know. And they didn't really at any point just try and slow the game down when they had that advantage where they were dominating possession. So, as in terms of Lukaku, would he have made a difference? There's an argument to say he would, because he's a natural goal scorer, and that's what he's been brought into the club. But on the other side of things, if he did play, would Pulisic have been in the position of what he was to go and score that goal himself? So it's a difficult one. It's a tough one. But as in terms of Chelsea, the character, the strength in the strength and the belief of their character as well to come back from 2-0 down, I thought was absolutely brilliant. And then what seemed to happen in the second half, it was like 10 minutes where each team would be the dominant, then it would switch.
Yeah.
And it was a wonderful game. It was a brilliant game. And the craziest thing of it is that they are the second and third best teams in the Premier League.
Mm.
You've got the top team, Manchester City.
I know.
It was a wonderful game.
6 seconds in, Danny Higginbotham.
Yes.
Again, of course, I worked the show. And
yeah, I
thought it was a very strong yellow, not a red for me. Now, of course, you know, you read stuff and you hear stuff. A lot of people thought it should have been a red card. Doesn't matter what minute, the first second, the last second, whatever. I thought it was a strong yellow. What did you think?
I did think it was a red. I did think it was a red, and I think it's ridiculous that I'm saying this, but if it was in the 40th minute, he'd have got a red, I think. It's one. How many times have we seen it where it's not right, but how many times have we watched a game and gone, if that was a little bit later on in the game, you know, that would have been a red card. It doesn't make it right. I do feel that it should have been a red card just because it's an unnecessary force.
Let me stop you.
Yeah.
Where I try and differentiate is reckless and there's violent. I put it just on the reckless side. It's his forearm. It's going towards a player. I get that. It wasn't swung, I don't think, in it.
Mm.
Where, like, the elbow, of course, is a more of a dangerous thing. Listen, I'm borderline, but I'm just yellow side of it. Don't you think benefit of the doubt, like, forearm pushing towards the face instead of an outright motion to swing into him? That, for me, was a difference for me. But
yeah,
you explain why it's different.
I see where you're coming from. The big thing you're always looking at as well is, does a player have a look at the opposition player before he does something? That's usually a telltale.
And he wasn't looking.
Yeah, it's usually a telltale sign. But I just think why I thought that it was a red card is, what is his arm doing there? There's no need for it to be there. It's not as though he's going up for a challenge 50-50 where they're both jumping straight. I don't think
there's players always jump with their arms up. And there was a motion towards, who was it?
Aspilicueta.
Yeah, it was a motion towards him the point of difference is you thought it was violent.
Yeah.
And I thought it was just a reckless challenge.
Are you putting a player at risk with doing what he did? Could he potentially, I know obviously he didn't, could he have broken Aspilicueta's cheekbone
or
nose with that?
I don't think so. I don't think so.
Hmm.
And I should know because I've had my cheekbone smashed with
can
a...
tell.
He used to be good looking a long time
no,
ago.
No, but that's the thing. It's like, it's opinions.
Hmm.
You know, you...
Subjective,
you,
totally.
Exactly.
People get so wound up about it online and what do you think of this? We can have 10, 20 players there, ex-players.
Yeah.
We have 10, 20 referees that might say something a little bit different. And that's the nature of the game. Okay, so we differ on that as well.
Yeah.
I think we differ on quite a lot of stuff, Danny, me and you.
Yeah, but that's fine because I was an elegant ball-playing centre-back and you were like a central midfielder to get
different,
stuck in.
Different, yeah. Just on Liverpool. Now, we know they're going to lose their star players, Sadio Mane and Mo Salah, Naby Keita as well, to the African Cup of Nations.
Mm.
On the back of this performance and some worries about defensively, they still look a little vulnerable at times in most games. Their defensive record is not awful, but they look a little vulnerable, conceded two again here. Plus those two players being out particularly, how are they going to cope this next month? And can they stay within somewhat striking distance of Manchester City over this next month or so?
It's very difficult. It's very difficult. I think if we go back to the start of the season, we'd have to go back to the predictions. I had Liverpool probably finishing, I'm not too sure, maybe fourth, something like that. They have surprised me. Not surprised me in terms of how good they've been, because I know the players that they've got, but just how well Van Dijk's come back.
Mm.
Surprised me. Matip's gone up another level.
Really good, yeah.
Yeah, they're starting to get more goals from midfield. Salah's still doing the same thing. We know that Jota, how he's been. So I think the thing is now, you've got the likes of Jota, you've got Firmino. These are players now that are potentially they're going to have to step up to the plate. I think they've got enough as in terms of getting results, but it's just Manchester City. They're
incredible.
They're just
a different level, I know.
And at times you have to take a little bit of a step back and go, they're on their own level at the moment without a centre forward.
Who might be closest to them out of these two teams, Chelsea and Liverpool, after watching this?
I still think Liverpool.
Mm.
I think when I look at Chelsea...
It's funny, Danny, because me and you... were on the same page at the start of the season.
Oh, yeah, I was Chelsea for the Premier League.
I tipped Chelsea at the start to win it.
Yeah.
Based on what we saw last year, the Champions League victory, Lukaku coming in, the likes of Werner and Havertz moving forward in their development, which still, and I know there's been illness issues, and I get that. It may be a little unfair. I still want more from Havertz. I still want more from Werner.
I think the one thing I would say about Chelsea, my assumption was based on the signing of Lukaku. And as you quite rightly said, the number of players in their second year now and being defensively very strong. I think they have come at times, and I thought they had a great performance against Liverpool. They've become a little bit predictable as in terms of the way that they play. You know, you have a number of players at times, especially within that front three, if Lukaku's not in there. Mm. You have players that all want to take up the same position. Becomes very narrow. And if you haven't got Reece James, you haven't got Chilwell, okay, Alonso's great going forward, can get caught out of defence.
And there's
brilliant going forward. Mm. But I just think due to that, and I think the variety that Liverpool have, as in terms of going forward and what they can bring, I think Liverpool are in a better position to challenge Manchester City, but I do think it's going to be very difficult. What about yourself?
Yeah, I tend to agree. And again, that's a big change to what I thought we'd see. I think we haven't seen the Tuchel kind of evolution progress very quickly, and I think that's the disappointing part of it. Just a final thing before we move on to the next game. Christian Pulisic, of course, you know, a player that we keep a real close eye on, and he's been asked to play in different spots. He's had injuries issues at the start of the season, etc. He's been a wing-back. In this game, he started as one of those little number 10s behind the main guy, which is Havertz in this game. He got his goal. What's your gut telling you about his future at Chelsea? Where he might play, what the manager thinks about him, and whether Chelsea is still the right club for him over the next few months and seasons, maybe?
It's a difficult one, because I think where he started yesterday is where suits him.
Right.
You know, one of the two on the left-hand side behind, you know, your front man, whether it's a false number nine. What I didn't get is for the last few weeks, he's been playing as a false number nine. He's not a false number nine. He's not, with all the goodwill in the world, he's not a player that's good with his back to goal. He wants to be ball at
facing
his feet,
forward.
Exactly, driving forward. So that was a little bit surprising. So you've got that. Also, the fact of his default position is wing back. And he's not a wing back either. So when I look at it, your two number 10s, and potentially that's one of his two best positions. And on that left-hand side, you have Mount, you have Havertz, you have Ziyech.
Maybe Werner,
Hudson-Odoi potentially. Yeah. So there is an unbelievable amount of
competition.
And competition. But as Tuchel's shown, I think, he's prepared to give the benefit of the doubt to the person who's actually doing well, holding on to that shirt. But time will tell, because there comes a point when you look at Pulisic and you think to yourself...
Right. So put yourself in his shoes. Would you rather toil away and maybe try and make wing back your...
No.
Or would you say, you know what, maybe I should move on to get a regular spot in the number 10? I think it's too early for that, yeah?
Yeah, it is, but it's like someone turning around to me as a centre-back and saying, would I like to make myself a left winger? I could try it all I want. I'm not going to do that.
And you're going to enjoy doing that?
No, yeah. I'm not going to enjoy that. So from Pulisic's perspective, you're looking at it and you're going, okay, I'm doing something for the team, but there has to come a point where I'm getting the best out of myself. I don't want to do this throughout my career at a football club as big as Chelsea are. And I don't think that time is anywhere near yet. But the more he's playing at left wing back, the more he's going to be thinking it. He's going to be thinking it.
All right, let's go back. That was a brilliant game, Chelsea 2, Liverpool 2. First half was amazing. We thought it was going to be one of those classic games. Second half wasn't quite as good.
For 25 years, Mike's has been making lemonade the hard way. Mike's Hard Lemonade. Hard days deserve a hard lemonade. Mike's is hard. So is prison. Don't drive drunk. Premium all beverage with flavors. All registered trademarks used under license by Mike's Hard Lemonade Company, Chicago, Illinois.
Let's move it forward to the next game we're going to talk about. Arsenal 1, Manchester City 2. Wow, another great, interesting game of football to watch.
Yeah.
We'll get to the penalty decisions in a second, Danny. And again, I don't think we agree on these, but that's absolutely fine. But how impressive was Arsenal, Danny?
Brilliant.
I mean, I thought everything they did without the ball, sometimes deep, sometimes kind of medium pressing, sometimes high pressing, with the ball, clean, use the wide areas, great. The City didn't really want to work back in. Mahrez and Raheem Sterling don't really want to be running back. Allowed the fullbacks, Tierney and Tomiyasu, to get forward. I thought they were very, very good. And when you look at the scoreline, so kind of unfair. So just first of all, let's get to Arsenal. I want to get to your take on being an ex-centre-back on Gabriel's performance. But Arsenal, good.
Brilliant. Brilliant. I was looking at, obviously, I watched the game, and I sort of compared it to when Arsenal last played Manchester City.
Yeah.
Got beat 5-0, played the back three, completely different team. You know, completely different team, was relying on experienced players, playing in a back three because he didn't really have the centre-backs that he trusted. And now all of a sudden you fast forward it to what they are now. A young, free-flowing team, looked defensively strong, which is the first time.
New defence, goalkeeper, everything's new back there.
If I'm an Arsenal fan, I'm excited at the moment. It's probably the youngest team in the Premier League. If you can keep those players together and enable them to grow together, there's going to be exciting times ahead. But the only thing I would say, and it's something I said a few times, is that there still needs to be a little bit of experience in that team. And you look at some of the points that Arsenal do drop, some of the red cards that they get. I know Xhaka's obviously had red cards before. This time it was Gabriel, what he did with the penalty spot, and then afterwards. Mm. That's where you need an experienced player to grab hold of him before he gets that second.
So he had there's no argument there. Two correct yellows.
Yeah.
Just inexperienced, like lost his emotional control.
But that's
in the
what
game.
Can happen. That's what can happen. Remember when I was a young player myself, and you know, you'd play with experienced players, and you'd be on the cusp of just getting carried away with the supporters, getting carried away with what was going on in the game. And then all of a sudden you feel one of the experienced players just grab hold of your shirt and just say, calm it down
a little bit.
And that's where Arsenal are probably a little bit short. You look at Lacazette, but his contract's up in the summer. He's a centre forward. You look at Xhaka, well, he has previously been captain. Okay, he's doing a good job. He gave the penalty away. He's previously been captain. Aubameyang, I think in time to come, that decision will be the making of Mikel Arteta, what he did with Aubameyang, because he's shown people who's boss. He's not accepting it. And for whatever reason, it's allowing the younger players to flourish now. And the younger players, what happened to them last season, the ups and the downs. And there was a lot of low points for Arsenal last season. I think they've grown from that. And this season, they've just taken everything on board. And if I'm an Arsenal supporter, this is probably the most excited I've been about this Arsenal team for a long time.
Yeah, I feel like the foundation is there, Danny. Yeah. There's a whole different foundation now. And the team will continue to, I guess, improve. And they'll sign players for different spots. But, you know, it's not as though they're young. They look like they've got the ability to take this club forward. They play in a way that the fans want. I think the manager is growing, learning all the time. I wasn't sure about the behaviour of Aubameyang. I wasn't sure whether that was the right thing to do, to alienate, to discard your top goal scorer. Time will tell on that. If they continue to do as well as they are with Lacazette and maybe Nketiah or others, then fair play. Mm-hmm. Well done. But again, I won't shy away from, wow, I thought that was a big, big call that I didn't agree with.
Do you think Arsenal are now a more attractive club to join than they have been in the last 5-6 years?
It depends who you are, but mostly yes.
Yeah.
I think good young players particularly would be attracted to this.
I think good young players would be, and I think an experienced player.
What sort of experienced player?
If Arteta,
I don't know whether an experienced champion player coming in, would they think this project's a little bit too early for... they'd be looking for that guy anyway, I don't think.
No, an experienced player in terms of a player that Arteta signs and sits him down and says, you know, maybe you're going to be captain. You're going to help the growth of these younger players. You know what it's like when you become a senior player and you see these younger players coming through. As a senior member of a team, you get a real buzz from it. I used to get a real sense of satisfaction with being an older player and these younger players coming through and you're seeing them evolve, you're seeing them mature and grow. I think that would be something that would appeal to a number of experienced players. Yeah,
yeah, yeah. Just let's get to the penalty, the big decisions in the game. The two penalties, of course, either end of the field. I thought that the initial referee's take was accurate and was good enough, and that the VAR didn't need to get involved. It didn't get involved in Edison on Odegaard when he came out and slid in with his left foot. Again, I thought the referee's in a good spot. He sees the ball move to the right. Of course, we've all seen the replays, and people send me social media clips of the little in and out of the foot coming and stuff, and Odegaard, the contact coming on the foot. I could argue that Odegaard's left foot didn't go to the ball and actually stood on Edison's foot. Anyway, I think there's enough doubt in that, Danny, for the VAR to say, you know what? This angle looks like it's a good tackle. This angle looks like it's a free kick. Let's stick with the decision on the field. I felt that was a right decision. Before we move on, I'll get a take on that. But isn't VAR for clear and obvious howl of decisions? Like, oh my, awful decision, you've got to change it. That wasn't a howl of decision.
No. When I first saw it, I was like, adamant, Stonewall penalty. It's a definite penalty. Then you start to see the replay and it's like, okay, has Odegaard actually ended up fouling Ederson?
Stepping on him.
It's a really difficult one. I think it's a scenario where whatever decision...
Whatever was given wouldn't have got switched. Yeah, I don't disagree with that.
I think that's... And that's because it's such a close call. It's such a close call between the two. I remember when, before I moved over, I spoke to a former referee. And I asked him, I said, what is the intention of VAR? And one of the things he said, and it really stuck to me, he said, what we want from VAR is to make the punishment fit the crime. So, for example, if a referee, as you quite rightly said, makes a poor decision and he gives a penalty or he doesn't give a penalty, VAR is to do justice. And these in-between ones, as you've quite rightly said, it's a real difficult one. And we have to be careful because I think what we had started getting away from is VAR refereeing the games.
Right. Or re-refereeing the games. And every challenge then could be looked at in around the penalty box.
Whereas I'm feeling VAR is starting to creep a little bit more into the game to start to referee the game. VAR shouldn't be a comfort blanket. It shouldn't be a comfort blanket. VAR should be...
It's a kind of emergency, like a, you know that's, like you just said, unjust. That's unfair.
Yeah.
We've got to... Oh, hang on a minute, ref. No, come and have a look. That's really, really wrong.
Yes.
So yeah. I totally agree.
That's 100%. Right. And that's what VAR was there to clarify to, you know, the clear and obvious errors, which I get. Mm. But at the moment, I just feel as though it's going back to starting to referee the game again.
Right.
And I don't want that because earlier stage of this season, it was great the way that it was done.
Let it go. Just let the game, let it go a little bit more.
It's not a sport, as much as people want to say it, sport is not perfect.
No, it's not.
It won't be perfect.
Super subjective, people.
Exactly. Like, so let that continue, unless, as you've quite rightly said,
there's a howler, unless there's a shocker.
Then let it do its job.
All right, second one. It was Granit Xhaka, wasn't it, defending Bernardo Silva, who gets done a little bit on a clever move from Bernardo Silva. So good at that, where he moves inside him. Referee again. He's in a great spot, Danny. He's looking there. He sees the challenge right ahead of him. He knows the intensity. He's doing it live at match speed. He motions this. Basically, get up.
Yep.
Get up. Like, you know, I've seen it. Not enough for me. Get up.
Yep.
Ball goes out. He gives the corner. Was that the one?
I'm trying to think.
Whatever.
Yeah.
The ball's taken away. Nope. No foul there. Carry on. VAR gets involved.
Yeah.
And this is where maybe we differ. I don't know. He says, oh, no. Hang on a minute. No. Come and have a look at this, referee. Stuart Atwell, it was Jared Gillett who was the VAR. Mm. And, of course, the angle came. We see the little bit of shirt pull. Again, Danny, I'll say it again. I thought he was in a good spot. I didn't think it was a howl of a decision. He was there. He felt it. I thought he looked to go to ground straight away, Bernardo Silva. I think he brushed, the legs brushed. I didn't see Granit Xhaka offer a foot out. I didn't see him make a foul.
Mm.
I get there was contact coming together, and of course I understand the little bit of shirt pull, but at that point I would argue he was on his way down.
Yeah.
So I was okay with the on-field call, but you tell us what you think.
We swapped texts over it, and the only reason I can see where the penalty was given is just how many times do we see a shirt being pulled by an opposition player, but they let go.
All right, it happens a lot.
Yes.
And they get away with it.
They let go, but, and this is really nitpicking, you look at it and you think, if Xhaka had have let go of the shirt, maybe a split second. I know, I'm with you. I'm with you, but I'm trying to see it from, not from my perspective, I'm seeing it from the VAR perspective, and they're looking, right, okay, what reasons are we giving this penalty? And the only thing that I can come to is, it is the shirt pull. He keeps hold of Bernardo.
Are you inference, because we saw it in slow motion, so it looks like he's got the shirt even longer than he actually did.
I suppose so, but then there's the argument as well, because it happened Watford versus Spurs. The same happened, you know, you've got the Watford player holding on to Harry Kane's shirt, I think, as well.
Yeah, you got all
so
your,
it's
you got,
it's, yeah, it's a difficult one. What you want to have, let's put it this way, if it's a definitive penalty, you and me are sat here going, yeah, penalty.
Right.
But the fact that we're debating over a penalty tells you that it can go
wasn't
one
a howler. Way.
Stick with what's on
I
the
know.
Pitch.
That's what I thought.
And
yeah.
like I say, it goes back to once again, VAR starting to interfere a little bit more and starting to referee the game. I don't think they should. I want to see a referee, don't know whether I've seen it yet, you have to correct me if I'm wrong, I want to see a referee go over to a VAR screen and not change
Well, this
mind.
One, I was in the studio, Danny, and I said, stick with it. Be brave.
They just
stick
don't.
With it. But they might, there's, I can think of one, I can't think of it, but I think I remember talking about one occasion where he went over, and I didn't even know if it was in the Premier League.
It
might have been, and he said, no, what? Okay. No, I like what I, but it might not have been in the Premier League, it might have been a different league.
Yeah.
But I was just thinking, you know, it wasn't a howler, mate. You're okay. It wasn't.
Yeah.
And listen, I know that maybe listeners are, you know, will be outraged and stuff, and I understand it's super subjective. I understand everybody's point of view. Everyone's got an opinion on it, and it's probably, you know, some agree with us, some won't. But my goodness, didn't they get a reaction, those two decisions?
It did, and I just wonder whether, when the referee's called to go over to VAR, over to the screen, I wonder whether he feels pressure to turn the decision over, to make a different decision. Mm. I wonder whether he feels the pressure of that.
Yeah.
Because he shouldn't. No, he shouldn't
absolutely
do.
Not. Absolutely
he's
not.
There to referee the game.
Absolutely.
VAR is there to help.
Yeah.
Help, not hinder. There we go. That's my new phrase.
We're going to end it right there on that decision. Just quickly on Manchester City, Danny, I think the manager said it well afterwards that they lacked energy in this game. They weren't at their best. I think me and you do agree on Rodri, how good he is, by the way, as an everything, as a player, as a defensive extra defender, as a big guy that can win balls.
I've got to say Partey was immense, though.
Partey, yeah.
He was immense in that game, but you're going back to Rodri.
But I think, you know, he stole it, not, and that's an unfair term. They won it late with a Rodri goal. I thought Rob Holding was a little weak defensively there in that first challenge. But is it a sign of champions that they don't play well and they find a way to win?
Yeah, 100%. Like over the years, like when I used to play against champions, you'd go on the pitch and you're like, we've given a good account of ourselves against, mainly at that time, Manchester United and Arsenal. And it really stood out against Manchester United. We'd come out, we'd be in the dressing room after the game, we're like, giving a really good account of ourselves. We've got beat 4-0. You're like, how has that happened? They're efficient. They're champions, they're playing about centre forward, they're efficient the way that they go about things. They're just incredible. They're on another level.
We see now they're a 10-point lead, Danny, Man City over Chelsea.
Look at that goal
difference
as well.
Same games played, 40 goals, plus 40, Chelsea are plus 29. Liverpool, who have played a game less than both Chelsea and Man City, are on 42 points, plus 34. So it's a strong position to be in. Wasn't one of their best performances, but it's got to be a good sign that they can still win. But fascinating game again. I really enjoyed it. I really enjoyed Arsenal. I really enjoyed what they did and how they've come forward. If they can be anywhere near consistent to that type of performance, both with the ball and without the ball, then they've got a shot at the top four.
They have, and I think how you have to look at the progression and probably being pleasantly surprised as a neutral is that they weren't in my top four at the start of the season.
No, not me.
You could argue they may not even have been.
They weren't in mine,
top
Danny.
Six.
They weren't in my top four, right, when we reset
on
Boxing Day. I think we went through the superlatives and what we expected. And I love what they've done. And I backed Arteta early, by the way, when lots of other people thought, oh, he's not
I
up
didn't.
To it.
I'm the first one to put my hand up.
Did you? You didn't think he was?
No, I didn't. I thought he'd be a good coach, not a good manager.
Right. So, but I still feel they're going to struggle to maintain that position. But I could be absolutely wrong. And if Arsenal get in the top four, wow. Just wow.
Yeah.
Given the change, given the differences, given that difficult start. Right, let's move on, Danny, because we've got other games to get to as well. And by the way, two sides of this game where there's a big story and lots to talk about as well. Manchester United 0, Wolverhampton Wanderers 1.
Yep.
Let's start with Wolves, by the way, because how good, I think we're similar here, where the respect and the admiration for Bruno Lage and what he's brought to Wolves, Danny. I know you've got some friends inside that camp and you speak to and you get an insight into how he works, but I don't need that, but I'll listen to it because I enjoy watching him.
Yeah.
I can see it all. I can see the style of football. I can see the defensive prowess. I can see the midfield passing ability. I can see, you know, what they're trying to do in terms of possession and creating. Goals haven't always flowed, but they're a good time story and a good time to respect and talk about how good Wolves are at the moment.
Yeah, I think at times we can sometimes forget that it wasn't about how bad Manchester United played. It was how good Wolves were. Wolves were absolutely brilliant. A lot of the times, not so much now, but a lot of the times you think to yourself, you've got to go to Old Trafford and you've got to have luck on your side. They didn't need to have luck today.
No, there was no luck.
You know, it's no. Conor Coady, obviously, he's the captain at the club there, and I know him quite well, and I asked him about Large, and, you know, yep. Bruno Large, the manager, and I said, how good is he? And he said, Danny, he said he's brilliant. He said, what we'll do, we'll have meetings before games, and he just completely broadens our horizons, just makes us really think for ourselves. And he gave me one instance. So they played West Ham a few weeks ago. They won 1-0 at home, and they were having a team meeting, and this was before they went out, a couple of days before the game was. And they had a pitch, like on a tactics board, and Bruno Large, he shaded in the two middle areas of the pitch.
Central. So yes, central
lengthwise. And he said to his players, he said, until we get to the final third, attacking final third, we do not go into that middle area of the pitch. He said, because if we lose the ball there, then Suchek, Rice, plays like that,
drive
counter on you so quickly. He said, the only time we go into that area is when we get round the back of them. And if you have the opportunity, anyone that's listening to this, go and look at the Wolves goal that they scored against West Ham. Semedo drives inside behind Suchek, behind Rice, and they're taken out of the game and they end up scoring from it. And he just whacks his Liverpool about and says,
I know it came back to us that, well, I think he said himself, I think 80% of their work is attacking play.
Yeah.
And attacking themes and different ways, strategies to find ways to attack. Great, isn't it? I mean, I bet there's not many managers that work at that, particularly teams that aren't expected to be around the top 6-8 sides that try and do that. I think there's a new wave of people. I think you could say Graham Potter is doing the same thing. They're in a similar spot in the league. They're doing brilliantly. Eighth in the league, Brighton, or close to that. It might have changed after today. So that's what impresses me. A guy can get on the front foot. He's not worried about, you know, we're going to go and play these Man United and different teams, and they want to believe in the way that they play. And that's what we're seeing right now. And we do this thing, Danny, every podcast, over match week, where we try and pick out somebody that's been underappreciated. I'm going to pick a Wolves player that I think is incredibly apt for this. A player that I don't think players, the fans of the Premier League, maybe don't know about what he's done in his past, but João Moutinho is a legend.
What a player.
He's a Portuguese legend. He's an international legend. He's got over 100 caps for Portugal. He's won things at different clubs. He's 35 years of age. We didn't expect the hero of this game, Danny Higginbotham, to be a mid-30s Portuguese star and not be Cristiano Ronaldo. He's underappreciated because people just watch him. Watch what he does. Never gives the ball away. Durable little guy. He's a little guy. He's had a million games, and he's still there in the middle of midfield, knocking the ball, scoring a goal today, cajoling. He looks a million bucks when he plays. Again, he's had so many miles under the clock. What a player he is, isn't he, Moutinho?
Yeah, he's great, and people talk about leaders. He's a leader, and I don't mean, you know, leaders don't have to be vocal. They can lead by example. He's a player that, if you're under pressure, he'll take the ball. He'll take the ball with 2-3 opposition players.
Confidence,
around.
Anything.
He doesn't care where he is, and I think he really compliments Neves. And what we've seen from Moutinho is actually the one that's getting further forward out of the two at the age of 35.
I think he can do anything, Danny. He can get forward, he can sit, he can play make, he can do everything.
Yeah. And I think if you look at what he did as well, the goal point in case with Jones, he heads the ball out, no players around him.
No.
He's probably got beyond the desire to get beyond a couple of Manchester United players to find himself in that space. And great finish as well into the corner when the pressure's on. Brilliant.
Well, I'm pleased we've given Wolves plenty of love there. Yes. They deserve it. And they're a big story of this season. Manchester United is also a big story this season, Danny. Mm. And, I mean, I'll summarise the game, right, because there's plenty of things that we want to get into. But it was a real disappointing performance. It was started out basically a 4-4-2 with Greenwood and Sancho playing wider. It kind of worked well against Burnley. And that's the way that he went with. He kept Bruno on the bench. Phil Jones was a big story coming into the game. Didn't end being a big story, by the way, because he did really well. Fair play to Phil Jones and tremendous credit for the amount of games he's played over the last 2 years and put in that performance. Varane was his partner there. But it was disappointing. Ralf Rangnick said it was disappointing afterwards and asked some difficult questions about his work and what's the progression from the Palace game where they looked like, well, there you go, this is what we expect to see. The pressing, etc. It was pretty good. Now, everything's been blamed at Man United, and you're close to this club. You know it very, very well. Whether it's the structure of the club, whether it's the constant change of managers, whether it's Ollie at the wheel, whether it's, you know, we've got Rangnick now, we've talked about systems, we've talked about whinging players that were called out, I think, a couple of weeks ago, different systems. Does it come to the point, Danny, where we got to look at the players in this squad and in this team, are they capable of delivering the expectations that the fans, the media, everybody expects from a Man United team. And that expectation, by the way, when you finish second last year, is to be challenging for the title, to be progressing a long way into the Champions League and producing the football that they expect at the Theatre of Dreams. So I predominantly want your opinion on this squad, Danny. You know it more than anybody else. And we've talked about different managers. We've seen different managers. We've seen different systems and still get a performance like that where the players, wow, they just look average.
I think that the problem that you have with Manchester United at the moment is that when I look at the team, if we look, it's difficult under Ragnar, but when we look at Solskjaer when he was manager, how many world-class goals did we see? We saw some absolute...
Individual moments.
That's Manchester United. It's individual moments at the minute. You go back to the glory years that they had. And by the way, they're a long time gone now. You know, and they had individual moments, but you know what? They had a team ethic.
Right, so when the moments weren't happening, because you can't do these moments all the time in every game, but you're absolutely right. When the moments weren't happening, there was a foundation,
they could win ugly.
A durability to win in all different types of ways.
Yeah.
And I think it's pretty clear they don't have that.
No.
So, what does that mean about these players that produce the moments? They're not team players? Can they not be part of a team that can grind out victories? Again, the players, Danny. Now, I don't know if you're comfortable doing this, but I would like to go through this team and maybe some others in the squad. And the question is, when we get to these players, right, are they capable of delivering the expectation or be part of a team to win a title, to win the Champions League?
Why is that the expectation?
Because it's Manchester United.
No.
They spent $1 billion dollars.
But they are miles away.
Right, well, that's what I'm saying. Well, that's it then. So, right? That's what I'm saying. Yeah. That's what I think.
So then, it pains me to say it at times. You know, my family are all Manchester United fans. But as a neutral, when I look at this Manchester United team, as I have done for a number of years.
Right,
yes, I think we got a little bit excited in the summer, say they're going to challenge. They've got Ronaldo in, they've got Varane and what have you. I think at times, because it's Manchester United, it's like, should be challenging for the title.
Yeah.
But realistically, is it a squad?
Well, that's what I'm talking about.
So I don't think it is. So when we talk about the fact of the players that are playing now and you're saying, is this player good enough?
Can he take them? Can this player take them to where?
No individual at that club can. It's got to be a collective. You look at Liverpool, right? So if you were to take, the best way for me to put it is, you take Chelsea's best players. You take Liverpool's best players. Take Liverpool's best player or best two players. Manchester City's best two players, even though they've got loads of them. Same with Chelsea. If you put them into Manchester United's team, they make Manchester United a Premier League winning team. If you took the two best players from Liverpool, two best players from Chelsea, and two best
all
players...
All of them?
No.
Just two individuals.
Pick two players.
So what's your point? Your point is that the collective team ability is more important than individuals.
To a certain extent, yes, you've got Salah that scores all these goals, but Van Dijk is incredibly important. So you could have, let's put it this way, if Ronaldo this season was to score as many goals as Mo Salah...
Yeah, they've got no chance of winning. They're still not going
to win the league.
Right, so this is the point I want to make.
Yeah.
So in that regard then, let's go through it quickly. So another good way of putting it, could you see this player in a championship team? Is that a good way of putting it? David De Gea, I'll start off. Yeah. I could see him winning a Premier League title. Aaron Wan-Bissaka, I'm going to say no, but to the last minute of conversation, could he play for... I'm going to say no. But there is a way that you can have a steady Eddie in a championship team. That's what we're saying, right?
Yes.
Right. So does Aaron Wan-Bissaka for you, could he be in a championship winning team? Could he be part of a title winning team? Aaron Wan-Bissaka playing at right back every week.
When I look at Liverpool, Manchester City, Chelsea,
they're better, aren't they? They're way better. So that's tough.
That's what I'm doing. That's what I'm doing. Individual comparisons there, you know, because they're
okay.
The teams are challenging.
That's fair enough. I think Phil Jones is a different situation now. I think Varane for me is a yes.
Yes.
Harry Maguire didn't play today. I'll be honest with you. I think he could.
Yeah, depending on who his partner is.
Right.
So who's in front of him.
Right, so that's a good enough... That's like he could be part of it. Luke Shaw, for me, is a Yes.
Yeah.
I really like Luke Shaw. Agreed. Scott McTominay. You know what? I almost want to say yes.
If he was playing,
if he was playing with a Bernardo Silva and a Kevin De Bruyne and other players, he's not going to be a detriment to
no
as big a detriment to them not winning a title.
Mm-hmm.
So you like McTominay as well?
Yeah. And you start to see what we're starting to see now.
Because we're not stupid. Right. We don't expect there to be a Mo Salah or Virgil van Dijk in every position. You look back to Leicester City, they had Danny Simpson and they had Wes Morgan and different people that were able to play in a team that won the title. That's what we're talking about here. Real quick, Matic for me is no.
Now, yeah.
Fred for me is no.
Yeah.
Jadon Sancho.
Yeah, in the right team.
Do you?
Yeah.
I don't see it yet.
Okay.
All right. Mason Greenwood. I don't see it yet.
No.
In the future, absolutely. Ronaldo, yep.
Yeah, I think it speaks for itself.
Cavani, I mean, it's kind of older. Not sure he's going to play that amount of games, but obviously a class
yes.
player. I don't know whether we should go through many others. Marcus Rashford, Danny, there's one I wouldn't mind getting from you.
Yeah, it's...
For me, see, isn't Rashford a perfect case in point with this Man United team that is capable of the moments? But is Marcus Rashford capable of rolling his sleeves up in a wide of a 4-4-2, like, you know what, we're not doing great today, but I'm going to help out defensively, I'm going to make sure I keep the ball, and I'm going to take a chance if I get one? Or is he disappointing with his career?
This is where I look at, and this is when you talk about individuals. So I look at Liverpool, I look at Mo Salah, arguably the greatest performing player in world football at the moment. And, you know, I say that 100%. How much has he asked to defend? Does he defend?
No, because the team's built in other ways where...
So he will get you the goals. Listen, I'm not saying for a second...
Who will get you the goals? You think Rashford will?
I think Rashford, but what I'm saying is that if you look at Salah, it's a point in case where, for me, world-class, best player in the world at the moment. And, you know, I'd say that. People can say what they want. I think he's incredible. He's asked to do what he's good at, which is get the ball, attack, get us goals. That's why Trent Alexander-Arnold, sometimes people talk about him defensively. Well, yeah, I'm not surprised he gets no protection.
I mean, Salah sometimes comes back.
Yes.
I know Robbie Earl sometimes appreciates him coming back and helping out. And sometimes he did. I think he did in their last game against Chelsea. But I know what you mean. I take
he
your
will
point.
Do, but
he's not. He's fundamentally. He's,
yeah,
he wants to stay high.
If you look at, I look at Liverpool, Chelsea, not so much at the minute, and I look at Manchester City. Mm. That team is built for the players to succeed. It's meaning the players are playing in positions that bring the best out in them. It's meaning that the player next to him, behind him, or in front of them is benefiting from the players around them. I don't see that with Manchester United. That's why I say it's a team of individuals. We circle the amount of players that play today and we say, could they play in a championship winning team? Yes, they could. Not as a group, though.
Mm.
And that's the thing. A lot of the time you're looking at a team and going, oh, could any of these play in a championship team? And you're going, no. There's a number of Manchester United players that could in the right structure.
Okay. Let's quickly, before we move on, we can't spend all... I mean, by the way, we could chat all day on some of this stuff. Just a manager-wise, Ralf Rangnick, early yet.
Yeah.
The hardest game he's had, Wolves.
Yeah.
So he's had some kind of simple games. And some games have been decent, Burnley and maybe Palace. Others have been okay, a bit scratchy. Well, how do you think it's going to go? I mean, he's a smart guy. He's an experienced guy. He hasn't managed a big, big club before. In this next few months, do you think his work is going to be successful and improve this team as... And then the club say, you know what, this guy hard at the start, but he's found a way to turn it around. We will have him consult and be a bigger part of the club. Or, as I suspect, that if it doesn't go well on the field, he won't be doing much consulting next season.
So if, let's just say that he doesn't get the results on a pitch and doesn't become a manager, who does a consultancy role then?
I don't know. They've got to get a director of football.
I think he's
got
it.
You still like him for that.
No, it's not. It's not whether I like him. I think he's going to be regardless. If
he's
going to
be a consultant, he's not going to be director of football. He's going to consult.
Well, at the moment, you've got John.
Consult Bird. Could be anything, couldn't it, Danny? Consultant could be a phone call every
two.
For me,
I'm looking. I'm thinking. If it's a consultant, it's like you're the man we're going to decide who's going to be our next manager.
Really?
Now, yeah.
Call him a director of football then.
But they've got that in John Murtagh, and he's been promoted from within. So I don't know. My concern with Manchester United and with Rangnick. As the manager, is that if everything goes according to plan, they'll probably give him the job. It means the players have bought into
what job?
The manager's job.
Continuing.
I think he wants it.
To continue after the season as the
dependent on how they do.
Mm.
Do I think he should get it? No. I don't think he should get it because I think he would be better suited to
director of football. And coach the club.
Yes, exactly. Mm. So if he isn't successful and he doesn't get it, it means it's because he's brought in this style that's not been successful. He then becomes gets his consultancy role for two years. He's going to want to bring in a manager who sees the game the same way that he sees it. But if it's not been successful, what do you do?
I know.
So I look back at Klopp when he first joined Liverpool. I look back at Guardiola when he first came to Manchester City. It took those managers time. They didn't do it overnight. But what Ragnick's trying to do compared to Solskjaer is night and day. And I don't think you can do that during the season. It's different fitness levels. It requires different tactics. We saw they switched out.
We can't talk about everything, but they switched to a three, which is incredible. Given
that goes against everything.
It does, yeah. So he felt the need, Danny, today, which is worrying. Felt the need to switch into something totally different, more like Wolves. Yeah.
Reese's peanut butter cups are the greatest, but let me play devil's advocate here. Let's see. So, no, that's a good thing. that's definitely not a problem. Reese's, you did it. You stumped this charming devil.
It's a struggle. Anyway, again, let's move on with these other games. We'll be a little bit quicker now. Watford, 0. Davinson Sanchez gets a goal. Spurs, 1. Very late, a set piece. He glanced it in. What have you thought of Spurs, Antonio? I don't know how much of this game that you saw. It was one of those 10 o'clock Saturday where there's a lot going on at the same time. A bit of a grind.
It was.
I don't think Spurs are at their best when they've got a breakdown, deep block. I think we probably would agree on that. And they're better when teams come onto them a little bit and they've got the spaces for Lucas and Son and for Harry Kane. Are you still confident on what Conte's doing at Spurs?
Yeah, I am, because they didn't play brilliant, I don't think. You know, they dominated possession, in particular in the first half, but not going anywhere with it. But they found a way to win.
Yeah.
And, you know, Conte, he's come in, he's put his stamp on it. And that's what your top-class managers do. They have an impact. And they have an impact straight away. And I think that players buy into it because of the success that managers have had in the past. Mm. You know, he's coming. We know that he plays with a back three. They've looked strong. Harry Kane's now starting to get in the goals. Tottenham. I think if you're a Tottenham fan, the interesting thing for me is going to be, and I said this when he first got the job, was what happens between him and Daniel Levy.
I know, that's a big, because you weren't sure about him, were you? You didn't think the fit was right at the club. Daniel Levy doesn't spend money. Antonio Conte likes to spend money. Again, we were different. I was like, you know what? Okay, I get that point.
Yeah.
I like him as a coach. I think he improves players, he improves teams without, you know, not always spending a ton of money. So that's going to be the interesting thing.
That's going to be, whether it be January or whether it be the summer, if Conte's asking for a certain amount of money, because look at the money you spent at Chelsea, look at the money you spent at Inter Milan. He's not shy when it comes to spending money. And we know at Tottenham, when you look at the other teams around them, they don't go above and beyond spending money. Mm. So if Conte's looking at Daniel Levy and saying, well, you know what, I need X amount of million to win this team the title, Daniel Levy's going to make the decision that he wants to make, and that could be an interesting one to keep our eye on.
Just a couple of things on the team, individual for Spurs, right? And we know where they're a little bit weaker and breaking teams down. And it worked out. They won the game fine. Yeah. Oliver Skippen and Højbjerg. It seems like Tongi Ndombele has just gone off the board a little bit in terms of, because I see him as a player that can do a little bit more going forward. I think we have a choice of Skip and Winks and Dele or Lucas Moura in terms of how they play. Just a quick one before we move on Dele. Me and Rob talk about him a lot.
Yeah.
And mostly in like, wow, what could have been with him.
Oh, yeah.
Have you got anything on Dele that's different or... You know, it was such a. In some ways, he's such an ideal Antonio Conte player.
Yeah.
He really is a Taro Vidal, like a goal scoring guy potentially. Energy, he's got a great engine. Dele, what's going on? Like different managers now, and he can't get favoured by any of them. What's happened to him?
I think he needs a fresh start. I think there's, you know, you don't. I know it's been a little while, but you don't become a bad player like that. I think he needs a change. Potentially a change of scenery, just to get things going again. Because there's definitely a player there. I think one of the biggest things was, and I've said this about top class players who come at a young age and hit the ground running. So you think about this. I don't know whether you would agree, but a lot of the times when a young player comes into, as he did with Tottenham, all he saw for a number of years at Tottenham was trajectory. All he saw was going, was rising.
Starting to believe the hype?
Yeah, not even so much believing the hype, but if you're on that trajectory all the time where you're just going up and you're getting better and better and better and better, how do you deal with that little bit of a drop? You know, you look at other players that'll be coming as a young player and it's like up, up, down, up, down, up, down. But they learn from those things. I look at the Arsenal players. Mm.
They're learning on the downs and they're bouncing back on the ups.
Exactly.
And he's just had up, 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 up. And now he's had a down.
How do I respond?
Mm.
So that's where I probably look at. And that can be, you know, that can be a mental side as well, because, you know, we've seen with these Arsenal younger players, some of them went through tough times last season. But you can guarantee they're becoming better players because of it this year. Whereas I think with Dele Alli, came from MK Dons, went to Spurs, hit the ground running, was incredible, was a first choice for England. And then all of a sudden, when you have that little bit of a drop, it's like, well, okay, let me look back on my experiences of when things have gone poorly before to get myself going again. He's not had that. So I just think he needs a little bit of a refresh. I think potentially needs a change of club. And I still think there's a player in there.
Top four, Spurs, Man United, Arsenal, West Ham, who we'll talk next. At this point, my friend,
yes,
who would you sort of favour to finish in the top four out of these teams? And we'll talk about it because Spurs has got to be right up there with a chance. Do you?
Manager.
Mm.
I think the manager has a lot to say in it. You know, they've got two games in hand over Arsenal, only 2 points behind them.
Yeah.
You look at the goal difference, they're really strong, getting stronger defensively. I just think that with Conte as your manager, Harry Kane, who's going to hit form soon.
Yeah, we start to do it, Danny.
He's not hit full form yet, and Tottenham are sixth. Mm. Two games in hand on fourth Arsenal, so I do fancy Tottenham.
To the
what
team
about yourself?
Well, again, I readjusted and I feel a bit bad about it right now, but I thought Manchester United would kick on to finish in the top four. Ragnick said that it's the minimum acceptable is a fourth place spot, and I just feel that Spurs sometimes might draw lots of games because they can't quite find a way through. But
lack
who knows?
Of Europe?
Pardon?
Lack of Europe?
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, and the manager's a driver. He's going to drive them forward. It's going to be fascinating. West Ham United, Danny, the next team we're going to look at in their game quickly. Of course, they're in this shout as well, and they've had a good little rebound of late after some poor performances. Back-to-back wins, I believe, now on Tuesday, and then, of course, on Sunday. 3-2, they beat Palace at Selhurst Park. Another good performance from them, and finding ways to win against a Palace side that had some selection issues and some COVID issues. Mm. West Ham have bounced back well, Danny. Like, who's impressed you with them?
Well, my underappreciated player.
Oh.
Yeah.
You just set
me up for that, yeah.
Oh, right.
Manuel Lanzini. Yes,
Manuel
okay.
Lanzini.
He scored a penalty, but what a finish for his first goal.
Oh, yeah.
He was brilliant. And I think that the way that David Moyes plays, we know that at times it's been Lanzini. We know at times it's been Fornals.
Benrahma in there.
There's been a few different players in there. But Lanzini's been there for, you know, a few years now. He's still got that touch of class. And when he's playing in that number 10 role, you know, you've got the likes of Antonio, when you've got the likes of Bowen, players like that that are going to stretch the game, they're afforded extra time and space. And that's what I thought he did really well against Crystal Palace. Every time he got the ball, he made the right decision. And Crystal Palace are a team that are set up to lose to West Ham, because they love to dominate the ball. Don't get me wrong, they ask a few questions.
They're vulnerable to counters.
They're vulnerable to the counter-attack. And West Ham are probably in the top three in terms of counter-attacking teams in the Premier League. But I just thought Lanzini was outstanding.
So you think David Moyes generally, and I'm asking because I kind of agree as well, generally underappreciates Lanzini a little bit? We know the type of players that Moyes appreciates.
Yeah.
And to be fair to Pablo Fornals, I think he's changed. He's adapted to the new manager. Like, wow, he wants me to run back and tackle and to fight. I mean, Fornals covers tons of ground.
That's a big thing.
I wonder if Lanzini might start to get the message that I got to be as well like that to get in the side. There's no question he's got the ability.
Yeah.
Do you think he can be a mainstay in this team now? He probably will, by the way, because Benrahma's off with Algeria to the African Cup of Nations, so he's got a chance to play a lot.
I don't see any reason why not. I think when you look at Lanzini as well, and you look at the energy that's around him, the fact that West Ham, you know, I don't think they get as much credit as they should do at times. You know, Moyes, he is much more than just a counter-attacking manager.
Yeah, he is.
They will go and dominate some games. But at times when they are sitting back, he's a player that can turn defence into attack really quickly. He's got great feet. He's got great vision. So I see no reason why not. But I think Lanzini, just like West Ham, probably at times don't get the credit they deserve, because what David Moyes is doing, we go into this new season and nobody's surprised at the challenging for the top four. That in itself
is pretty blooming good. Yeah, it's pretty good. Yeah. It really, really is. Listen, let's just quickly go through the last few games, Danny. We've been chatting a while here. Yeah. Everton, oh, blimey. I mean, I know it's funny. Every team we could get into some real detail, you know, and we could be on here for 3 hours. Everton 2, Brighton 3. Again, both sides loving what Graham Potter's doing, Danny. Yes. I don't know about you.
Getting his just rewards.
Getting his just rewards will be mentioned. I mean, if Brighton stay, I mean, they're eighth of my table, and maybe I'm, again, I might be outdated one game. But in that position of the league table for Brighton Hove Albion, with their budget, with everything else, that's special. I mean, he's doing an amazing job. A great win at Everton 3-2. Quick line on Brighton. I don't be forever here. Quick line on Brighton and Graham Potter. Then we'll switch over to Everton.
I think with Brighton, we see with Graham Potter, he's a big thinker of the game. You know, always looks at, you know, different ways, different systems.
Systems always changing.
Plays in different positions. Their biggest problem was the final third.
Yeah.
Putting the ball in the back of the net. They're starting to do that now because you look at the amount of draws they've had. They didn't necessarily lose, but the amount of draws they've had this season has been incredible. And he's just got them going in the final third. Mm. And, you know, they could be a team that could challenge for that top
yeah,
six.
Yeah, just looked at the table. In fact, the Wolves just jumped over Brighton, so they're now ninth. But still, it's a brilliant position.
They're brilliant. Graham Potter, the thing is, he's going to get linked to every job when it becomes available, and he's only going to grow at Brighton.
Yeah, absolutely. Everton. Everton Football Club. Rafa Benitez. The long-suffering Everton fans, 10th last year under Carlo Ancelotti, with the expectation to start the season with the new signings and James Rodriguez and everything else, lovely football at the start, went downhill. Of course, Rafa comes in, unpopular with some. Give me a minute on what you feel the club is lacking right now and where they might go. I mean, bottom half of the league table, Dominic Calvert-Lewin was a positive.
Yeah.
Anthony Gordon, and I'll say this, by the way, that Anthony Gordon was almost my underappreciated player.
Yeah.
I just, with Moutinho's goal, and I thought there's a chance to really appreciate Moutinho, I went for him. But Anthony Gordon is a bright spark for Everton. He's got stronger throughout this season, physically stronger. His quality is always there. Those two players, great. Mm-hmm. Great that DCL is back. But Everton got serious problems or just suffering from lots of injuries right now for Rafa?
I think they do have a certain amount of problems. I think when you look at Benitez, he's a counter-attacking manager. And early on in the season, they started really well, and then certain players got injured. What I would say is that the reason Everton fans are so frustrated is that they've spent a lot of money over the last few years and gone backwards. Yeah. That's the problem. I think managers have spent money. Then they've had something like, I think it's 11 managers in 11 years, if you include David Moyes.
Right.
You can't do that.
Marcel Brands was meant to stop come some of that with director of football.
Yeah, like, but okay, then he was the one.
And then he fell out.
He took the blame for whatever was going on. We know that Rafa Benitez, he likes to make his own signing, so you don't necessarily need a director of football for that. Ancelotti likes to make his own signing. So Marcel Brands was probably thinking to himself, well, hang on a second, if I'm not doing the job that I'm supposed to be doing, but I'm still getting the blame for it, then there's a problem. So I think what they've done, they've spent a huge amount of money over recent years, and they now have players that are suited to different managers, so it's a mismatch of a team, and they have to be careful, because, you know, I know there's a gap between the bottom three, and I don't say for 1 minute that they're going to get relegated, but, you know, they're getting dragged towards that way. And like I say, I think the main frustration of Everton fans is that A, they've spent all of this money over the years, B, they hardly spend anything in the summer, and then C, Benitez, former Liverpool.
Tough.
One of my fans one of my friends is an Everton fan, and I asked him about Benitez. Said, "What do you think about Benitez?" He said, "I will support Everton Football Club. I don't support Rafa Benitez." Mm. So it has all the makings.
I hope he gets. I'm sure that nothing's going to happen there imminently. I don't think
you wouldn't think so.
They've had some bad injuries. They need Richarlison back in the side, etc. We'll see. I just feel for Everton fans because we've got a lot of them that support our podcast and obviously watch our broadcast here. And a lot of Everton fans in the USA. Yeah. And it's a little bit tough times right now. Again, quickly, last two games, Danny. Brentford 2, Aston Villa 1. Steven Gerrard, give me 30 seconds on, is his honeymoon over? He can't win every game.
He can't win every game. And he came out afterwards, didn't he? He said he wasn't happy how they defended. Mm. So he's on a really good path. He's taken that. He's taken the manager's job, and he's done he's had an unbelievable start. As for Brentford, love them.
Love
everything about the club. Love everything about the manager, where they've come from, what they stand for. They'll be absolutely fine this year. And full credit to him, coming from a goal down as well to turn it round. Brilliant.
Brilliant. Yeah, I totally agree. I just think Leeds United, the final game we're going to look at, Leeds 3, Burnley 1. Danny, Leeds, what a big 3 points at Elland Road. I think every win now, they understand, they appreciate, is massive, because they're having a tough time.
Yeah.
They still got players out. Patrick Bamford, the main guy last year, is still out injured. Unbelievably, came back from his injury, scored, and got injured in celebration, and then he's still out. So that's a big victory for Leeds United. I mean, of course, they're not out of it yet. They're on 19 points after 19, which is often, a point per game is often going to be good. 38, probably going to be okay. Burnley, my friend, our last little chat, I think, I feel that Burnley could struggle this year. And I've readjusted Southampton, okay. I had them to go down. I think they're going to be okay. I think I made a mistake there. But I think Burnley could do it. I think Burnley could go down. I just don't see enough goals in them. Maxwell Cornet is going to be away now with Ivory Coast, is it, I think, and the African Cup of Nations. He's going to be away. Chris Wood's not scoring goals.
No.
They're the last, I would say, of an old-school mentality team. The last. Because it's different now with Vieira, Palace, and everybody else that tries to play an expansive way. Is this going to be the season that they get? And I know you want to say no, but how worried are you that Sean Dyche's philosophy in this team that's so strong might not score the goals to get enough wins to stay up?
My concern for Burnley is that if you look at the teams around them, in particular Newcastle
there's potential
there.
They can win a few games on a spin, I feel,
and
with them.
Burnley, I don't see spending money. And that's one of the things that with Sean Dyche, he should have been able to spend.
Yeah, with the new ownership going in there and promising that we'll support Sean Dyche whenever he wants and stuff, and that they spent a little bit of money, but...
And they haven't done. So that's my concern. I'll probably have a better idea come the end of January if anybody's able to do it, but I still feel that Burnley will be all right, because throughout the years, you look at the teams that go down, and more often than not, it's teams that struggle defensively. And I think Burnley, as time goes on, they'll scrap enough 1-0s or 2-0s.
Maybe they'll do it again.
It's
going to
be close.
It's going to be really close. Yeah, maybe them or Newcastle, by the way the table's looking right now. But we're about halfway in, and lots of football to go. That's it. Thank you very much, Danny, my friend. Great to have you. And be on the lookout later this week for Robbio's exclusive interview with Crystal Palace manager Patrick Vieira. I listened to it and it's very, very good. We'll be back next Wednesday, January 12th, recapping some of the rescheduled Premier League fixtures. Until then, it's bye for now.
The longest field goal ever attempted is 76 yards. The longest field goal ever missed? Also 76 yards. Why bring this up? Because knowing your limits matters, both when you're kicking a field goal and when you gamble. Betting more than you're comfortable with is like trying a 70-yard field goal. It probably won't go well. So set a limit when you gamble and stick to it. Want more helpful tips like this? Go to KeepItFunOhio.com for games, quizzes, and lots of ways to keep your gambling from getting out of hand.